structure, discipline, accountability.
Mistreatment, misrepresentation.
Knowledge is power, y'all.
There has to be accountability.
This pandemic of toxic work culture and mistreatment has got to stop.
The podcast for federal employees by federal employees.
What's up? What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Fed Up. I'm your host, Ron Speakman. Before we get started, I just wanted to quickly take this moment to share this disclaimer with you all to provide more clarity that myself or any of my guests on Fed Up do not speak for or speak or act on behalf of any federal agency or union, specifically the ones we are talking about within this episode of Fed Up. And all opinions or views expressed and or experiences shared on this podcast are those of the individual speaking and do not represent the opinions or views of the federal agency or union that are discussed in this episode, nor does anyone on this podcast, officially or unofficially, represent the federal agency or union being discussed within this episode of Fed Up. Any guest speaking on this podcast are doing so off the clock, off duty, and out of uniform on their own personal time. And again, do not represent the federal agency or union discussed on this episode of Fed Up. Having said that, we have a repeat guest joining us today for the show to give us an update on the cause he is continuing to fight for regarding the NELC, which revolves around open bargaining resolutions, which you can hear more on episode 29 here on Fed Up. So go check that out if you haven't already. But here today, we will talk more with the activists behind this Build a Fighting NELC movement, including a conversation around a quote unquote taboo topic, which can make some people pretty uncomfortable. But nonetheless, I think it's a topic worth talking about and venturing into, especially considering the amount of mistreatment and misrepresentation from either our union leaders or even management. So let's get right into it here and welcome back our guest, a city letter carrier from NELC Branch 9 out in Minneapolis, Minnesota, Mr. Tyler Vassar. Tyler, welcome back to the show, brother.
Hey, Ron. Thanks for having me. It's good to be back.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great to have you back with us. Now, Tyler, let's jump right into it here. In our first interview with you, we talked about what your Build a Fighting NELC agenda is and about opening bargaining resolution and what it can mean for our brothers and sisters out there. So I kind of want to go further with that discussion if we could. But first, can you give us an update on where you are currently in getting your message out there to the people? Because last time we spoke, you said there were six branches that passed open bargaining resolution, which included cities such as Minneapolis, Knoxville, San Francisco, Buffalo, Pasadena, and Milwaukee, with a dozen or so other branches that were bringing open bargaining resolution to the table that week or that month for that discussion at their meetings. So from the time the first interview with you was released, which was March 4th of this year, that's a time span of just over a month here. What are those numbers at now? Like, how many branches brought it to the table and passed it? How many are currently bringing it up in their next meeting for discussion? And how much did your audience on that Zoom meeting grow with Build a Fighting NELC? And again, for the people out there, if you still don't know about Tyler's movement here, Tyler has a Zoom meeting held once a month from now until the NELC convention in August. And I'll have that again posted in my description for this episode in case someone in Fed Up Nation wants to check it out. But Tyler, what is the update here? Talk to me.
Yeah, wow, that's pretty incredible to hear. It's been a month since our last interview, and at that time there were only six branches that had passed, only six, but that, you know, that's still a good number. But there were six branches that passed open bargaining at that time. 1 month later, we're at 21 NELC branches.
Wow.
And one state association that have passed the open bargaining resolution so far. Yeah, shout out to the Montana State Association, the first state association to pass it. Yeah, but we're 21 NELC branches that have passed the open bargaining resolution so far, and I know there are a handful, a half a dozen to a dozen more that are in the process of discussing it, proposing it, and are planning to bring it forward in the weeks and months to come at upcoming meetings. So, I mean, that's pretty incredible.
Absolutely.
You know, all it takes is one branch passing a resolution for it to go to the convention and be discussed and voted on. But the whole point here is that we want to not just get this passed, that's obviously the goal, but we also want to start a discussion in NELC branches across the country about a new approach to contract negotiations. Getting as many branches as possible to pass the open bargaining going into the convention, on one hand, it strengthens it, you have built-in support going into the convention, but on the other hand, it allows us to start that discussion and start that process with members across the country, even before the convention starts, which I think is a really positive development.
Absolutely. Now, you mentioned one state association. Who was that again?
It was the Montana State Association of Letter Carriers.
Montana. What's up, Montana? Way to go. Way to set the standard here and just hopefully get everybody else moving towards open bargaining resolution. But man, it's clear that it's steadily picking up steam here. And it's clear that our brothers and sisters want to see some change within the NELC. And listen, I hope National is listening and can not only hear, but understand why its members want change and demand more and deserve better from them. But having said that, let me ask you this, Tyler. How has the open bargaining resolution grown so much over the past month? I mean, what do you contribute to its popularity here behind the growth? Because obviously, as I said, it's starting to pick up momentum here, moving closer to another month as we draw near the convention here in August.
Yeah, that's a really good question. What I think, from one thing, I think workers, not just postal workers, not just letter carriers, but workers across the country, across different industries, I think in this moment have heightened expectations. They have expectations of what we deserve and what we should see in contracts and better wages, things like that. I think one part of this is inflation. Regardless of what media might say of, oh, inflation's slowing down, it's slowing down. The fact of the matter is grocery prices, just to take one sector, grocery prices are almost 20% higher than they were pre-pandemic, in 2019. Not to mention housing prices, an overall cost of living has just increased for people. And I think workers see that. And that combined with the fact that unions across the country in 2023, they organized, they fought, and they won. And some of them won record contracts, the best contracts they've seen in decades. All of these things, I think, are coming together to show that, that workers have heightened expectations. And I think it's clear for letter carriers and NELC that we need a new approach. But that alone isn't enough just to build off of. I think it's important that we get organized around these things. And so you'd asked, what do these Build a Fighting NELC Zoom meetings look like? How have they looked since the last time that we talked? I think that getting organized with these Zoom meetings has been a really important part of this. I told you last time, our first meeting in January, we had 104 people in attendance. That showed me, oh shit, we have the ability to really turn this into something. So the next meeting in mid-March, it was about a week after we talked, had 150 in attendance. And now, we have our next one coming up on April 14th. So far, we have over 200 registrations. Now, obviously, not everyone's going to show up, but the fact, and then more people are going to register between now and the meeting. But that just shows that this is continually building. And we had branch presidents, we had stewards, we had members, NELC members who don't hold any even elected position. We even had some CCAs that are getting together to discuss the open bargaining resolution, but also to talk about how can we build a stronger union together. And I think really the open bargaining resolution has been a really good place to start, because I think right now the contract is everyone's thinking about it. And I think to be frank with you, the only reason that there's space for us to even hold these meetings that have been so popular and grown so much is that, quite frankly, there's a vacuum of leadership at the top in NELC. I think, we've heard about the news that has just come out about the Article 10 charges against our president. It's pretty crazy. I don't have a whole lot of time unless you want to get into that. But the fact is, there's a vacuum of leadership. They're putting forward an old way of doing things with, I like to call them, secret negotiations. They don't give us any updates. There's no transparency.
Yep.
And so because of that, there's a huge vacuum, and it has allowed us to say, okay, if our union isn't stepping up, then we need to step up. We need to get organized. We need to get together and talk about a new approach and a new way forward.
Absolutely. Well said, brother. You're absolutely right. Transparency and open communication, which is something not just a union should have, but fucking management and an agency and an employer should have as well.
That's right.
But well said. And listen, I said it before and I'll say it again here. It's clear that most of our members are pissed off with how things have been going within our union, the NELC. And it's pretty evident through the 1 month that has gone by since the last we spoke, and you nearly tripled the number of branches that passed the open bargaining resolution. And as you said just moments ago, that includes the NALC State Association amongst the masses here. Now, Tyler, I know you just told us what you thought the contributing factor is to your Build a Fighting NALC movement, but I want to speak more on that if I can, more specifically, your Build a Fighting NALC Zoom meetings, which again, clearly are the contributing factor to your numbers tripling here. And you have one every month. Is that correct? Yes or no?
Yeah, that's right.
And then your next meeting here, I believe, is right around the corner as it's Sunday, April 14th.
That's right.
But I'm sure that these meetings have been a big impact on your growth for the cause as well in passing the open bargaining resolution and spreading awareness to all regarding this. Now that you consider that the contributing factor, I want to ask you, what do you contribute to, or what is the driving factor that has these meetings growing and becoming more popular?
Yeah. I mean, if we had open communication, we had transparency, we had a leadership that was letting the membership know what we were doing in negotiations, even mobilizing the membership to put forward a fight, even a symbolic one with rallies and stuff like that, there would be no space for us. But the fact is we're getting nothing. And like maybe in a previous period of time, previous cycles and negotiations, members would have said, oh, this is how the process works. Let's just let it run its course. But I think in this moment, like I was saying, workers have a heightened expectation of leadership of our union. You say, hey, like we're suffering. This isn't just something like, oh man, I'd really like a contract. No, people are suffering from the impact of inflation, from the effects of this cost of living
Absolutely.
Increase that we're seeing every single day, every single year. And so I think it's a vacuum of leadership. It's the fact that our leadership isn't putting forward an approach that mobilizes the membership, that puts forward an actual fight, that has any sort of sense of urgency in it. If you hear a leadership give updates about negotiations, it's always just about the process for the most part. If they do get more specific, it's still vague.
Right.
And there's no sense of urgency behind it. Like, this isn't a joke for me. This isn't a joke for us. This is our material reality. And I think that is what's really getting people pissed off. And obviously there's a whole section of the union that's pissed off and ready for a new approach. There's a much smaller section than that is going to take the step to actually get organized. But that's an important layer of people that we want to reach. And it makes sense that those are the people that we're going to reach first. And then that layer of people can then activate the broader membership around these ideas, bring the ideas of open bargaining back to their station to discuss with their coworkers. Hey, things may look bleak right now, but look, there's a whole group of us on the national level that are getting organized to fight for open bargaining, fight for a new approach for our union. So I think that's really where it comes from.
That's right. One becomes two, four becomes eight, and before you know it, you're just moving along at a fast pace. So you would actually then say that, again, the driving factor that has these meetings growing and becoming more popular is basically, obviously our carriers are pissed the fuck off, but it would be more spreading by word of mouth because of that very reason, correct?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think really importantly was, you know, podcasts like Fed Up, podcasts like From A to Arbitration have grown and gotten an audience because members are looking to get educated. They're looking for ideas to discuss and debate the way forward. And so having your support, getting on your podcast, having Corey Walton's support and getting on the From A to Arbitration podcast has been, I think, really huge in allowing us to reach a broader audience.
Absolutely, man. Shout out to Corey Walton again.
That's right.
From A to Arbitration. Listen, anything arbitration, man, anything contract, any of that stuff, that, as Corey would say, that is his jam. So check him out. Learn, educate yourself. Because again, both him and I believe that knowledge is power. But yeah, I just want to give him a shout out real quick. But I appreciate you saying that. And I got to agree with you there. I think the word is spreading and the people are talking amongst each other, you know, member to member, as you said earlier, hell, store to store, president to president. I'm talking locally, obviously. But I think everyone is talking about it because a lot of members are unhappy right now, and rightfully so, with our national union. Now, I know I'm probably going to sound repetitive here. And my listeners out there in Fed Up Nation, listen, I know you already know what it is. I ask repetitive questions so the answers sink in and stay with us longer, especially when it's involving important things. So this is another question I'm going to ask you here that I did from our first interview together, Tyler. And that is, why is it important to get organized on a national level going into the national convention this August?
Yeah, I think, the national convention, it's really the supreme decision-making body of our union. I think we've heard that before. But what does that mean? It means it's a place where members can become delegates from their branch and can go to the convention, get together, discuss, debate, and chart the path forward for our union for the next 2 years. I think that's like a really that is a basic, you know, basic part of any union that strives to be democratic and represent its members. This is a really important thing. We have the ability, like, if we don't like how things are going in our union, we have the ability to change course. You know, if we don't think our union is going down the right path, the convention is the best place for us to change that course going forward. And so using open bargaining as an example, I think there is, I would say the majority, there is a huge section of this union that is pissed off about and doesn't agree with the current approach to contract negotiations, the secret negotiations where we're kept in the dark. Members are not told about what's going on, not even told really specifically about what our demands are, not mobilized. We're not really putting up a fight. It's all done behind closed doors. That is not the right way to win a strong contract. It's not the right way to function and run a union. The open bargaining resolution, we're putting that forward at the convention. We can fight for that. And if that is passed, that changes how the union will function with contract negotiations going forward. It'll change how we mobilize the membership. We'll give regular updates. We'll actually put pressure on USPS and we'll actually, you know, put up a fight for a strong contract. That's just one example of something that we can do at the convention.
I appreciate you answering that. Getting organized on a national level is the same thing that I always say as well. Just a bit different way is all. As I always say, united we stand, but divided we fall. Same principle here.
That's right.
Now, Tyler, I mentioned earlier how a lot of our members are pissed right now. And I can think of a lot of reasons why our members are pissed, but I'll simply ask you this because I think we all want to hear what Tyler thinks in this case. And I think you mentioned a little bit of it earlier, but we didn't touch much on it. But that question is, what do you think about the charges brought forth against our NALC president, Brian Renfro? And do you think his removal will happen? Is it warranted? And who would you like to see replace him should he be removed?
I'm sure a lot of your listeners listen to From A to Arbitration. If they don't, they should go check it out.
Absolutely.
The latest episodes are about the Ware report that Corey spoke on that goes over the charges and some of the back and forth. There's a much larger report that Corey didn't get into. I think it's hundreds of pages, but it's like, you know, it shows, you know, the charges and then the response from the person who was charged, President Brian Renfro. I think the charges are very deeply concerning. I think regardless of if the charges are upheld, they show, I think, pretty concerning behavior from someone in a national leadership position. The fact of the matter is, obviously, we're all human beings, but the fact of the matter is, if you're in an elected position, especially a national elected position that is so important to our role in contract negotiations and impacts the lives of hundreds and thousands of members of this union, then you are held to a higher standard.
Correct.
That's just a fact.
Absolutely.
That's just a fact. And so these charges, to me, I find them deeply concerning. I'm glad, you know, I think it's good that we have a process for these things. You know, if charges are brought forward, that should be taken seriously. It's just like, you know, any sort of, you know, criminal justice or law system of laws. We have a constitution that puts forward a process. Now, we can discuss of whether the process should be overhauled and change it a little bit here or there. I think it's good that there is a process. That being said, the charges that are brought forward are deeply concerning. I wish that it had been a little more transparent. You know, I find myself in a position where how do I bring these forward to the, you know, any LC members at my station in a way that makes sense to people?
Layman terms, right?
Yeah, but I think the charges will be upheld. That remains to be seen. Regardless of what happens, it can be appealed to the National Convention. And what I'll say is that I hope no matter what happens, that the National Executive Board is transparent and puts out documents so that members can make an informed decision. You know, if President Brian Renfro is charged with these charges, the membership has he has the ability to appeal it to the National Convention. I would hope that the Executive Board puts all the information out so that delegates at the convention can make an informed decision of whether or not they want to uphold the charges. That being said, I don't think a lot of the behavior that was put forward is becoming of someone in the elected national elected union position. I think it's pretty deeply concerning. It's obviously had an impact on our negotiations, had an impact on just the running of our national union. And so in terms of like a replacement or things like, I don't know what an immediate replacement would look like. I would say though, we've heard the beginnings of a team, a slate being put together in 2026 to challenge Brian Renfro or whoever the national leadership puts forward as a slate to challenge them for leadership. Because I think it's clear, and if you listen to the Ware report or read the Ware report on these charges, it's clear that we need a new approach. The whole point there is that individuals are just that. We're humans, we're individuals, we're prone to making mistakes. It's really important that you have a team around you that can actually, you know, correct those mistakes. Everyone has strengths and weaknesses. And if you have a team that has comes from a many different backgrounds and many different strengths and weaknesses in different areas, that you can have an overall approach and overall leadership that is stronger. And so I would say, based on what I've heard so far, I find it deeply concerning. And I think it's clear that we need new leadership. And whether that's that the fact that these charges are upheld, or that means in 2026, I think it's, yeah, I think we need to organize to have a new leadership and a new approach on a national level.
Right. And again, though, who would you like to see replace him should he be removed?
I don't have any particulars because, to be honest with you, I don't really know many of the people in national leadership position. I don't know them personally. And quite frankly, they haven't done anything on a national level that's made them really stick out to me, at least anyone that's currently on the executive board.
Right. I only ask that question because I think it's fair, because if we're organizing and we are fighting for this cause, and we were just talking about, obviously, the charges here, and Brian Renfro, our current president, I think it's only fitting that we do our due diligence, especially like people like yourself who are fighting the cause, to know the candidates or know someone that would be a good fit to take Brian's place should he be removed. That's why I asked you that question. Now, again, you know I'm not a political person. Fuck politics, right? But I know by saying this very next statement, it's going to be like, no, Ron, you can't just say that. You just said fuck politics. Well, yeah, I did. And I'm not a political person, but I'm just giving you my opinion is all here. And I think James Henry would be a good candidate to replace Brian Renfro should he be removed. But that's just my opinion. And we all know how opinions are. They're like assholes. Everybody got one. Let me just shut that shit down right there for y'all out there who disagree with me. It's okay. You can disagree all you want. It's all good. I got nothing but love for you. But just know that that's who I think, right, would be a good fill-in. So that's why I asked you that question. Who do you think, or who would you like to see replace him? I didn't know if you had somebody that you had that you were watching behind the scenes or were following. So
sure. Yeah.
But I appreciate you sharing that. But I wanted to get your take on that was all. And since that is one of the hot topics regarding our national union, I just, again, I had to get your take on it. But speaking of hot topics, I want to talk to you about something that we are not supposed to talk about here. In fact, before we talk about it, I want to share this disclaimer here with everyone, so the wrong idea isn't gathered by this conversation, as that is just what we are having, a conversation. But that disclaimer is simply this. The following discussion that Tyler and I will be having involves the term strike and its potential implications for USPS workers. While we are exploring this topic as part of a broader conversation about improving working conditions and advocating for better standards, it is important to clarify that we are not advocating, encouraging, or inciting individuals to engage in strike action. Our intention is solely to facilitate open dialogue and consideration of different perspectives on this issue. We believe that constructive discussion is essential for identifying challenges and exploring potential solutions in the workplace. Any decisions regarding collective action should be made through lawful and responsible channels, and individuals should always consider the legal and practical implications of their actions. This podcast aims to promote informed discussion and critical thinking, and we encourage listeners to approach this topic with thoughtful consideration and respect for differing viewpoints. Now, having said all that, let's get right into it here, Tyler. The forever word that USPS employees, more specifically city letter carriers here, right, are afraid to talk about here is the word strike. Personally, I don't consider this word a taboo topic as much as I consider those who coin phrase it as such as being overly concerned or fearful for talking about it. I mean, I get it why USPS employees, more specifically city letter carriers, would treat this as a taboo topic, but let's get real here. Who do you think should be more scared of a strike? The members of the NELC or any federal union for that matter, or the agency, our employer, which in our case would be the United States Postal Service? I think that the agency would be more fearful of a strike. But before we go any further here with that question, I want to ask you this question first, and that simply is, should postal workers have the right to strike?
Yes, I think that postal workers should have the right to strike. It's a basic democratic right that I think all workers should be entitled to. It's a democratic right that currently we are barred from having. And I don't think that's right.
Right. Yeah, I see your point there, and I couldn't agree even more. And you know what? How much more do we as federal employees, in this case, USPS employees, have to deal with constant mistreatment from management? How much toxicity and hostility and workplace violence do we have to put up with from management and on the workroom floor? How long should we have to be treated without dignity and respect? How many times do we have to deal with unethical and even illegal behavior at times, willfully, mind you, from management and our agency, and this includes those in HR? How many more employees do we have, quote unquote, going postal on management stemming from their years of this constant harassment and neglect, willful misconduct, and total disregard for us as employees and as human beings, right? And then we look at this as a tragedy. Well, what about the tragedy within the tragedy, right?
That's right.
Again, it's a behavior of, oh, hey, let's consequence the person who reacted to said behavior and call them the aggressor or wrongdoer, but turn the blind eye to why they reacted like that to begin with. Now, it's always the one who initiated their actions to bring on that reaction from another person, which, by the way, any reasonable person in that situation would have reacted and lashed back for how they were being treated, especially after they repeatedly brought it up to management multiple times and it never gets resolved. When is enough enough? We are accepting and tolerating the way things are, and it's allowing management to do it even more, causing even more hardship for our brothers and sisters with no repercussions whatsoever. And then you go to the union shit, right? Where union leaders and storts are in bed with management, not giving representation, and are even flat out ignoring their members at times, causing even more hardship for our brothers and sisters as well. So there are plenty of reasons why our brothers and sisters within the NELC, or any craft for that matter within the Postal Service, would even think about or talk about causing a work stoppage through striking. The reasons are there. I mean, listen, I preach all the time about utilizing NLRB, EEOs, OSHA, whistleblower complaints, our contract, the ELM, the M39, the M41, the threat assessment team. I mean, the POOM, yes, the POOM. There's some good ones out there, believe it or not. HR, there are also some good ones out there as well, even though most of them are terrible. Publication 552, Publication 553, Code of Federal Regulations, which is federal law itself, and so many other resources and avenues for us to use and or take to fight back. But what happens when these resources fail us? What other avenues do we have? It's just as you hear me say all the time, the chips are stacked against us. Toxic and hostile work environments, willful misconduct, neglect, unethical and at times even illegal behavior from management and the agency itself. Basically, total disregard for you as a federal employee, and now you're dealing with poor representation from your union, or lack thereof, I should say, non-existent. And now you have resources that aren't helping either, causing even more hardship for you as a federal employee. What cause of action is there for you to take after all that? What more can we do? So there are plenty of reasons there. And again, I want to be clear here. Tyler and I are not calling for or trying to sanction any strike. We are just simply having a discussion about whether or not postal employees should have the right to strike. And I, for one, say, hell yes, we should have the right to strike, especially for better working conditions and better wages. That is my opinion. And I stand by that opinion for obvious fucking reasons that I think we all can relate to. Management is never held accountable for anything they do. Point blank. They can even break the law itself and nothing is done. That's just bullshit. There's got to be accountability here for their actions, not just their actions, but for our politicians as well, for turning a blind eye to what we go through. Now, don't get me wrong. There are politicians out there who see and try to help us, and I salute you for trying. But in the end, as a whole, Congress, any politician in general, the lawmakers, hell, even the president of the United States. That's right, I said it. The president of the United States. They all have been and are turning a blind eye to how we are being treated. And remember, I'm not a political person. I give two shits about politics. But I understand why they are a necessary evil for our democracy. But is there really a democracy anymore in this country? right? And I know I'm going to catch some heat for saying this from y'all out there, but I simply call it like I see it. And I feel like no one wants to listen or want to listen and understand what exactly we go through as federal employees, especially us postal employees, regarding the constant mistreatment from management and our agency, which again, Postal Service, including how management, HR, the agency itself displays this unethical and at times, again, illegal behavior and creates a toxic and hostile work environment for us all. And it's clear to me that no matter what resource we use, a majority of them are in favor for the employer, the USPS in this case. Again, EEOs, HR, threat assessment team, hell, OIG, and now a USPS harassment hotline to call, which I'll get into that in another episode. But it seems like a lot of these resources that we have that are supposed to, quote unquote, supposed to be there for us employees are just for show. They're basically there to help the agency, again, the Postal Service in this case, to help mitigate any risk from being leaked out to the public. It's a way to keep it in-house, if you will, and to let others think that they exist for the employee. But basically, these resources are sabotaging the employee when we utilize them for the most part. Congress, y'all need to do better. I know about the Healthy Workplace Bill that is still hanging around, and some of y'all are for it. Some of y'all tabled it, and some of y'all just didn't even review it yet, probably because you don't care about it as much. But regardless, that bill is a start. And for those of you who want to take a look at this bill, you can simply go to healthyworkplacebill.org. I'll get into that more with another episode as well, strictly addressing that in Congress. But I just said all that there, Tyler, to make this point here. Postal workers should have the right to strike because of everything I just mentioned, especially since Congress and no one for that matter is taking us seriously with regards to what is going on here with postal employees. We'd rather push out on media and news outlets when a postmaster or supervisor is assaulted or killed and paint the picture as the manager as the victim. Don't get me wrong, it's a tragedy when anyone loses their life like this, but no one addresses or talks about why that happened. And I think that's a major issue that needs to be talked about, along with mental health, illness, and disorders being higher today than recent years. And that keeps increasing. Again, we are the only agency that has its own negative slogan here with going postal. Why is that? That's a question people on the outside of the Postal Service need to ask themselves, period. Attention to issues and provided solutions to any issues come from asking questions. Thought-provoking questions, for that matter. We all should be doing that in our personal and professional lives, having an open discussion like we are here. And that's the other part of that. Again, open discussions and thought-provoking questions. Now, I know that was a lot to say there, Tyler. And I apologize for making you wait there. I know I went off in a little bit of a tangent there, but hopefully I kept you engaged while you were listening there. But having heard everything I just said there, I want to ask you again, do you still feel the postal workers should have the right to strike?
Yeah, we have a contract, right? There's a contract between the NALC and USPS.
Right.
If the contract is broken, there's a grievance process.
Correct.
But the grievance process, I'm all for the grievance process, but the grievance process can only do so much if there is non-compliance from management side in that process, which we're dealing with both in Branch 9 and across this country. You hear all the time about people are dealing with non-compliance. They file a grievance, management, there's a resolution, management refuses to follow through with that resolution. They break the contract again, the same grievance gets filed over and over and over again. The fact of the matter is that workers and unions historically have an enforcement mechanism to force the hand of management to follow the contract if they keep breaking the agreed-to grievance process. And that usually comes in the form of strike action. I think the same thing applies to contract negotiations. If management, this goes for USPS, this goes for companies, you know, across the country in this process, if they continue to delay and delay and delay the negotiations process and say, nope, we're not going to give you a raise, or we're going to drag this out over the next months and years, we need a way to force the hand of management. We need a way to build pressure to make clear that this is our lives that are being messed with here.
Absolutely.
And that, you know, this isn't maybe the first thing you do. You find other ways to put pressure on USPS or on management, public rallies, get the public involved, get the broader labor movement involved.
Right.
But that strike action needs to be a part of this process.
We need to have the right to strike. Exactly.
That's right.
The right.
That's right.
Let me say it again. The right to strike.
And if I could say something on that, I want to be clear, at not advocating that we go on strike tomorrow. What I'm advocating for is the right to strike. And what would that look like?
Right.
I believe that we should start that discussion within our union. I believe that, that's a crucial thing that we need to talk about. I believe that in the next round of contract negotiations, we should negotiate that the no strike pledge get taken out of our contract. And at the same time, we should lobby Congress to repeal the congressional ban on federal workers striking. That is what I'm talking about here.
Across the board.
I think it's a crucial discussion that needs to happen across the board. That's right.
Again, well said. And again, I agree 100% that postal workers should have the right to strike, especially when it's for the right reasons. I mean, legally, we have a right to be treated with dignity and respect and work in a workplace free from harassment, bullying, violence, discrimination, etc. Basically have good working conditions.
That's right.
Yet every single one of these liberties, these rights, are being violated by management with no fucking consequences, including management's actions and the agency at times being unethical and even illegal at times. The chips are stacked against us, and it's only getting worse from here. When do we say enough is enough?
That's right.
You know what I'm saying? But hey, that's just my two cents. But listen, Tyler, let me ask you this, man, since me and you both agree that we should have the right to strike. But before I ask you this, again, being repetitive, you don't want to get the wrong impressions to the people out there who are getting their panties in a bunch. So I want to remind them out there that Tyler and I are not advocating, encouraging, or inciting individuals to engage in strike action. Our intention is solely to facilitate open dialogue and consideration of different perspectives on this issue. And again, any decisions regarding collective action should be made through lawful and responsible channels, and individuals should always consider the legal and practical implications of their actions. And again, this podcast, more specifically Tyler and I here, aim to promote informed discussion and critical thinking, and we encourage every single listener out there to approach this topic with thoughtful consideration and respect for differing viewpoints. Now, again, having said that here, crazy how we got to keep saying that disclaimer here just as a CYA factor, right?
Mm-hmm.
And just to even have an open dialogue about this topic. But listen, man, Tyler, my question to you is, since you think we should have the right to strike, and again, you talked a little bit about this, but talk a little more on it. What would that mean, or could mean, I should say, for us, the members of the NALC, if the members decided to organize and strike? And I'm not saying that we should, but again, if the membership as a whole decided that's what they wanted to do, what could that mean for the NALC membership? Do you not think that would jeopardize not just the city letter carriers, but the Postal Service as a whole? I mean, meaning it may open the door for capitalists during a strike if one were to happen, such as and Amazon, who is a billion-dollar company, by the way, to come in and take over, and therefore possibly eliminating the Postal Service. And I ask this because there's talks about us becoming a strictly parcel delivery service. So that's why I'm asking you all that. But if you need me to break down those questions again, I know that was a lot. Let me know.
No, I think that makes sense to me. Strike action in any union is always something that should be seriously considered and discussed before any action is taken. But I think the fact of the matter is strike action is the most powerful tool that workers have. We can have a grievance process. We can have a contract. We can have all of that. But if management refuses to follow the rules, then what do we have in that case? Workers have the tool that is strike action. We are the ones, just to put it this way, we are the ones who make the companies we work for run.
That's right.
The ones who make the economy run more broadly. Without us, there'd be no packages or mail delivered. There would be no goods produced more broadly. Nothing would function in our society without working class people more broadly. And given the primary importance of workers to the economy and our society, I think we deserve a decent life. That is a really small thing to ask for. We deserve more, a whole lot more than what we're currently getting. We deserve wages that stay ahead of inflation. We deserve dignified working conditions. That is not a lot to ask for. And if workers are getting screwed over, then I think we need to get organized and fight, quite simply. That's what we saw, I think, over the course of the last year. We saw the United Auto Workers Union at the big three automakers this last fall put up a big fight, and they won the best contract in decades. We saw the UPS Teamsters win pretty significant wage gains. And we can get into the details of those contracts. And, I'm sure there's parts that pick apart that weren't great, and they got to get organized and fight for a better one next time. But the fact of the matter is they showed workers across this country that you can, if you're getting the short end of the stick, you don't have to take it anymore. We can get organized. We can fight back.
Right.
And I think that is that's how I would frame strike action.
No, I appreciate you answering that. And I think we talked about this in the first interview. But again, those are great, great fucking examples of what can happen when a collective action takes place and there's organization that takes place, right? Organized amongst the members, if you will. Unity, if you will. And that's proof right there. But again, those aren't federal employees. Those aren't federal jobs, right? So you're right. We don't know what was in those contracts, their contracts specifically. We know what's in ours, and we know certain things on Code of Federal Regulation, which is federal law, dictating striking for us federal employees. But again, I think you made a valid point. It comes down to organizing and uniting for a common cause, which is better working conditions and better wages, point blank. It doesn't get any more simpler than that. So I appreciate you answering that. And just like anything else here, this saying holds true, right? And it's no risk, no rewards, period. Shut up or put up, right? To me, it's simple. It's clear as day. Obviously, a lot of people out there, there may be more gray area than there is for me, but it's pretty black and white for me. But a follow-up question for you here is, how would it be possible for our members, or even postal workers for that matter, to strike? What would that look like? I mean, we got Article 18 addressing the no strike clause in our contract stating letter carriers and the National Association of Letter Carriers will not call or sanction a strike or slowdown against the Postal Service, right? It's also, again, I think I mentioned this earlier, not sure, but it's federal law, which can be found in Title 5 of the U.S. Code, subsection 7311, which states that federal employees may not participate in a strike, assert the right to strike, or even belong to a union that asserts the right to strike against the government of the United States. And then if that wasn't enough federal law for you, they also put out there in Title 18 of the United States Code, subsection 1918, which states it is a felony to strike against the United States or belong to a union that asserts the right to strike against the United States. And in addition to the federal law, the Office of Personnel Management, they can declare you as an individual who participates in a strike unsuitable for federal employment forever, meaning you will never hold another federal position within your professional career. So having said everything I just said here, does all that translate to you that we just cannot strike? I mean, what's your take on that?
Yeah, I mean, like I said a little while ago, I think it would have to be an ongoing process in terms of we would have to organize to put forward a process within the NELC that in the next contract negotiation cycle, we fight to get the no-strike pledge taken out of our contract. And we could say in there, okay, no strike pledge taken out of our contract, and at the same time, we're lobbying Congress to repeal all of those federal laws, which I think are anti-democratic laws, repeal all of those laws to make it so that we have the right to strike. And I think how we would couch this, I think public support is a really important part of this. We're a public sector union, and we need the public on our side. And I think if you frame these things to the public as, you know, these are anti-democratic laws, I think people would be won over to our side. And you don't just leave it at that. You say, why would we want the right to strike in the first place? We have these processes. We have a contract. We have grievance processes. But we can make the case for people. And people aren't stupid. I think they would totally understand and sympathize with us. We make the case for people that our processes are not being followed. Management is constantly breaking our grievance process. They're engaging in non-compliance when we try to remedy them. This is why we need the right to strike to be able to stand up for ourselves. We could even make the case for contract negotiations. We are getting just clobbered with inflation or whatever, you know, in the future, whatever the main issues are. And we need a contract to be settled so that we can move forward in our lives. And if that's not, if it's being delayed willfully or just out of laziness or whatever, then we need some sort of enforcement mechanism to enforce our basic democratic rights and our right to a job with dignity and respect, a job with good wages and things like that. And so I think, there's a couple different things here. We need to do some lobbying, but I think a part of that lobbying is not just sitting down with a congressional person here or there. I think part of that would be public action. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that could be really popular and powerful in gaining support amongst the broader labor movement, amongst the broader community. I think that's kind of how that process would look like. I think I'm realizing now I didn't answer one of your questions about like a potential takeover from Amazon. Do you want to talk about that right here?
Yeah, go ahead. Finish that up. Because again, that was part of that whole section as far as if we did strike, that would leave the door open and an opportunity for a capitalist, maybe such as Amazon, to scoop in and take over for parcel delivery. Because again, that seems like what we're heading into, a parcel delivery service only.
Yeah. So in terms of like a potential takeover from Amazon or something like that, I think that things could be trending in that direction, whether or not we put up a fight. And so I think we need, regardless, it's clear that we need to get organized and fight back against any attempts at any sort of privatization or takeover from Amazon or something like that. What would that look like? I think any support, any strike would could be successful, would need public support. But I think a part of that process, we wouldn't just be out there saying, we're fighting for better wages for ourselves. We're fighting to maintain a public postal service that provides quality, fast, easily accessible facilities, relatively affordable, and we build public support that way. And then that is how I think we could both fight for better wages and conditions for ourselves and also fight to maintain a public postal service that provides good quality service for our customers. Because the fact is that USPS exists with our relatively affordable prices. It forces FedEx, it forces UPS, it forces Amazon to not be able to charge exorbitant rates for their deliveries. If we weren't there, I guarantee you UPS deliveries would cost a whole lot more than they do. They're already more expensive than USPS. But with us there, it forces them to not be able to have a sort of monopoly and charge whatever prices they want. I think that's one aspect of a public postal service that is really important. As deliveries become more important for people in their lives, I think we need to maintain a public delivery service, a public postal service that can provide that service for people.
All right. Going off of that last thing with Amazon, I was just using them as an example because I can see them doing it more so than a FedEx or UPS or DHL, whatever have you.
Yeah, for sure.
But I can definitely see that happening. And that's just one of the possibilities that could become possible, right? Mm-hmm. It's just a unknown factor that could or could not happen should the membership decide to strike or postal employees in general, for that matter. Because again, it's not just city letter carriers. You and I are city letter carriers. We're sitting here talking. This is our craft and everything, the NELC. But let's face it, postal employees in general across the board are treated just like we are. But yeah, I hear you on that. And I highly think that a Amazon type company would fly in should we actually do go on strike. And again, we're not inciting or advocating for a strike. We're just having the conversation about this in open dialogue. And that's just my two cents. So if the membership or postal employees in general were to ever organize and come together as one as and take collective action, and again, consider the legal and practical implications of the actions here, I think that it would be a possibility. But again, so would also the possibility of being someone else coming in and scooping up that parcel delivery service. So it's just one of those things that are 50-50. What do you believe in out there, people? Do you believe in better working conditions, better wages for yourself, a better home work life balance? It all comes down to what you believe in. And you mentioned something, two things actually I want to talk about here real quick. You mentioned lobbying. Let me just say real quick, if you guys, and listen, this is no insert into the podcast here for giving money to the political fund, okay? But I want to make that insert here. I don't get nothing out of it, obviously, but you mentioned lobbying. Can you imagine if every single one of our brothers and sisters out there donated to the political fund? Just a minimum of $3, $5, hell, even a fucking dollar. I'm retired now, and I was actually doing, I believe it was $20 or $25 a check before when I was working. Now, obviously, I had to change that. I'm now donating still $3 to the political fund because I understand how important that is. And again, fuck politics. I'm not a political person, right? But imagine if everyone donated to the political fund. If we had $1 million or close to it every single year, for that exact word you just mentioned, lobbying. Lobbying for shit to go our fucking way as city letter carriers. Imagine that. So if you don't donate, I highly, highly recommend you reconsider that and make a donation to the political fund for the union. Because again, that goes a long way. But I just wanted to throw that in there because you mentioned the word lobbying. And I think that was important. But also you mentioned public support. Public support is huge, and that can't be seen any better today in the modern day of the Postal Service with social media, obviously, we have today. But an example of public support just happened recently. As a lot of you know, lots of processing and distribution centers or facilities are closing due to consolidating by Postmaster General Louis DeJoy's 10-year plan. Well, on that list of places to be closed was the Western New York Processing and Distribution Center in Buffalo. However, local, state, and federal leaders have joined in this fight along with the public support and some union leaders' support as well to keep the William Street facility open. And ironically, the biggest problem with this issue is transparency, which is what our issue is with our national union, the NALC, currently. But this proves that public support plays a huge role in fighting for what we want or need as federal employees.
That's right.
So I just wanted to touch on those two things, lobbying and public support. I thought you made two great points there saying that. And again, I want to just say that the word cannot and should not are two different things. Right? Having the right to or having the need to strike.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
That's right.
But I'll let you all in the Fed Up Nation out there figure out where you stand on this topic, as I already know where I stand on it. Again, it comes down to how much bullshit are we going to tolerate before we say enough is enough. It shouldn't even get to this point. But here we are having a discussion about should United States Postal Service employees, or any federal employees for that matter, have the right to strike, which again, I say all of us federal employees should have the right to strike. After all, are we not human beings as well? We can only handle so much burden before it starts affecting each of us individually, our livelihoods, and even our families and personal lives. But again, I'll let you all out there decide on where you stand in regards to should we have the right to strike or not. Now, Tyler, how could we push for or win that right to strike? And again, I know you mentioned public support, but I want to go a little bit deeper, if you can, that is. But meaning, what can we do, if anything, to push for this right? And before you answer this, I want to be clear here to all the people out there. I do not care about politics. But I'm not a political person by any means. And politics is, that's your thing, Tyler, not mine. But I want to say again that Tyler and I are both not advocating, encouraging, or inciting individuals to engage in strike action. Right? Our intentions are solely to facilitate open dialogue and consideration of different perspectives on this issue. And any decisions regarding collective action should be made through lawful and responsible channels.
Sure.
Come on, y'all, say it with me. An individual should always consider the legal and practical implications of their actions. But talk to me here, Tyler. How do you think we could push for or win that right to strike? Again, meaning what can we do, if anything, to push for this right? Again, I know you mentioned public support, but what else can we do besides gaining the public support?
Yeah, well, I think first and foremost, we need to have an internal discussion on this.
Which we're having right now.
Which you and I are having right now, and that's great, but this should be happening on a national level. And I think...
National, just to interrupt you real quick, National is definitely listening, trust me.
Yeah. Well, here, please take some notes. I think this is really important. You know, it'd be one thing for me, for you and I to say this, if this wasn't something, if you and I were just some crackpots and we're the only two thinking about this, and we're just, you know, sitting around in a circle talking all day long about this without it getting out into the broader membership of our union or in society more broadly. But the fact of the matter is that discussions about strike action happen every single day on the workroom floor. They happen every single day on social media amongst letter carriers. People see that other unions are putting up a fight, they're getting organized, they're striking, and they're winning. And people are saying, huh, why can't we do that? I'm getting screwed over every day. We still don't have a contract and I need a raise. You know, like, I think, so whether or not you and I discuss this, whether or not the national leadership is putting forward a series of debates and discussions on this within the union or even nationally, whether or not we do that, it is happening every single day on the workroom floor. It's happening every single day on social media. I think that our union needs to take responsibility and say, let's have a structured debate about what that would look like, about what a right to strike would look like. I think that is really the first place to start. I think that we, you and I, are having a really important discussion here today, and I hope that we can continue within NALC to have informed discussions on the right to strike. And yeah, I really think that our national leadership should come out in support of it and come out in support of organizing discussions internally about what that would look like. I think that would be absolutely the place to go. I think before you go out into the world, you have to get your house in order, right? And that is, I think that's the first place to start, on top of all the other things I talked about, you know, public action and building public support and stuff for it.
Right. Exactly. Now, well said, brother. And another question I wanted to ask you that I forgot to mention to you was, we were talking about Article 18 and everything. You were talking about contract negotiations. Obviously, the cause is solely focusing around and revolving around open bargaining resolution, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now that we're talking about today here about should we have the right to strike, you mentioned about Article 18 and in our contract. Do you think that's something that should be brought to the table to be negotiated in this upcoming contract as far as removing that Article 18 out of there and actually putting in that we do have the right to strike? Obviously, the language is everything, but do you think that's something to be put in there?
I think absolutely. Unfortunately, it's probably too late for this contract cycle.
Sure.
But I think for next time around, absolutely. And I think that gives us a few years after this contract ends, is negotiated, that gives us a few years to start that discussion internally about what that would look like. But yes, absolutely. I think that Article 18 and the no strike pledge we should put that forward, that should be taken out of our contract.
Yes, sir. Well said. Plenty of fucking time. Mm-hmm. You hit the nail on the head there. So there's no excuses. But to paint the picture even more and explain in greater detail what you just said there and also a little bit before that, Tyler, the purpose of city letter carriers striking, or any USPS employees for that matter, would be because we are demanding safer and better working conditions, mm-hmm. in addition to higher wages, better wages, right?
Mm-hmm.
We are sick and tired of being treated without dignity and respect. We are sick and tired of the harassment in the workplace, bullying, the violence, and the totality of the toxic and hostile culture and environment that management, HR, and the Postal Service as a whole are creating and promoting. We are sick and tired of the unethical and even illegal behavior that the Postal Service and its employees, more specifically management and those in HR, are willfully committing and partaking in. With no discipline for it, by the way, including when they repeatedly and willfully violate CFRs, that's Code of Federal Regulations. And we are sick and tired of being retaliated against and wrongfully terminated by management and HR and the Postal Service as a whole for speaking up for better working conditions and even how we are treated when we get injured on a job. Meaning HR, those in the occupational health claims office or the human resource management specialist, the HRMSs, they're going out of their way to deliberately screw us when we get injured. And this could be seen in many different ways. And one big thing here to say also is that management is trained that an angry carrier is a good carrier. That alone right there causes an unsafe working condition. And all the screaming, the hollering, the belittling, making demeaning comments, directly or indirectly, that causes more mental illnesses and disorders to increase, mm-hmm. which can also have an impact on our physical well-being. It's bad enough that the job alone takes a physical toll on our bodies, right?
Mm-hmm.
But all this I just mentioned makes it a lot worse. Regardless, it's only right and a basic human right at that we demand safer and better working conditions and higher wages as well for what we do. Have some respect for what you do. Be proud of what you do. I know a lot of you are out there.
That's right.
But in saying all that, the most common demands when workers strike, which can be a wide array of issues, but the most common are higher wages and safer, better working conditions, which again are ironically are what we would be striking for if the membership ever decided to strike, that is.
Mm-hmm.
But again, let me be clear here. Tyler and I, say it with me, are not advocating, encouraging, or inciting individuals to engage in strike action. Our intention is solely to facilitate open dialogue and consideration of different perspectives on the issue and to promote informed discussion and critical thinking. And we encourage listeners to approach this topic with thoughtful consideration and respect for differing viewpoints. Any decisions regarding collective action should be made through lawful, responsible channels, and individuals should always consider the legal and practical implications of their actions. Again, say it with me, Tyler. We are not advocating, encouraging, or inciting individuals to engage in striking action.
That's right.
Now, I haven't shared that disclaimer with you for like the 100th time here for the sake of this discussion. We now know what the object or purpose of our strike would be, right?
Mm-hmm.
If the membership decided to strike. So if we strike for a lawful object or purpose, which again, we would be, we would then fall into two different classes, right? unfair labor practice strikers and economic strikers. Both classes continue as employees, but unfair labor practice strikers have greater rights of reinstatement to their jobs. Mm-hmm. Now, unfair labor practice strikers are defined as employees who strike to protest an unfair labor practice committed by their employer. Such strikers can be neither discharged nor permanently replaced. When the strike ends, unfair labor practice strikers, absent serious misconduct on their part, obviously, which could include strikers physically blocking persons from entering or leaving a struck plant, right? Strikers threatening violence against non-striking employees, or even strikers attacking management representatives. Sorry, guys, I know some of y'all wanted to make that attack, but don't do it. But serious misconduct is absent when striking on the striker's part, then they are entitled to have their jobs back, even if employees hired to do their work have to be discharged. And I'm getting all this from the NLRA, by the way, which is on the NLRB's website. And economic strikers are defined as if the object of a strike is to obtain from the employer some economic concession, such as higher wages, shorter hours, or better working conditions, the striking employees are called economic strikers. Obviously, right? Mm-hmm. They retain their status as employees and cannot be discharged, but they can be replaced by their employer under certain circumstances. Now, I don't know what those circumstances are. I'm not going to get too much more into that right now. I just thought I'd share all that with you out there. If I did, I feel like I'll lose a lot of people out there and bore them with these laws and subsections. But let's face it, these are important things to know. Everything I just mentioned there is good. But again, to get the full range of what we can and cannot do, I'll say it again and again and again. I am not a lawyer. You know, I want you to do your own due diligence. I want you to check this stuff out yourself. I just said the NLRA, the National Labor Relations Act, on the NLRB's website. Check that out. But also, more importantly, go talk to a labor lawyer. Talk to an expert who does nothing but this, and especially regarding, more specifically, federal agencies, federal unions, federal employees, right? So I'm just giving you bits and pieces of the puzzle here to think about and for the sake of this conversation. But I simply just wanted to share that with the people out there, some of that information here, and engage in open discussion and bring about critical thinking and engaging questions for the audience to resonate with or not, right? As I feel it's important to discuss these things as well as know our rights. And I'm not a lawyer. Again, I can't give you legal advice, only my opinion here. But I think our brothers and sisters, again, should do their own due diligence and learn more if they want with regards to striking and if we should have the right to strike. So again, there's CFRs out there, our contract, the NLRA on the NLRB's website, and one could always do their own research more as well. Come to think of it, I just may do an episode on this very topic on its own entirely and maybe even have a labor attorney on as well, especially regarding us postal employees. But Tyler, we just talked about a lot here regarding if postal workers should have the right to strike. Right. So
that's right.
So let me ask you this here. And I probably should have asked you this a bit earlier, but I just remember now. So let me ask you, why is it important to start the discussion and debate in the NALC about the right to strike? Or should I say, do you consider this discussion or debate an important one to have? I know you kind of answered that, but again, I pose that same question to you again, and also why or why not?
Yeah, I think if 2023 showed me anything, it's that workers don't need to take getting screwed over. They don't need to take that forever. I think the last many years, many decades, really, workers have really been getting the short end of the stick. We've seen companies, cut wages or give really, really low raises while inflation goes up. We've seen workers lose their jobs, plant closures. You know, like I think I mentioned at the last episode, my dad's plant during the recession of 2008 got closed. He had to went from having a 10, luckily he got into the job. He went from having a 10, 15 minute commute to an hour commute each way now. But like the point I'm trying to get to is that workers over the last few decades have been getting screwed over more and more. And if 2023 showed us anything, it showed that we don't need to take that anymore, that we can get organized and we can fight back, and that we can fight for better wages, better working conditions, better service, a better functioning organization that we work for. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think that to me is why I think, like I said before, strike action is the most powerful tool that workers have. in both, I think, at USPS, but also across the economy, across different industries, and that we need to start a discussion about what that would look like, why we think that that is a democratic right that we should have, currently denied, and what it would mean to actually take part in that sort of action.
Gotcha. Now, thanks for answering that for us. Another question here regarding should we have the right to strike or not, and then we'll move on here. But everyone knows that the great postal strike of 1970, with Vincent Brado helping and leading that charge, right? And how we wouldn't have collective bargaining today without that great piece of our history happening then. But I bring that postal strike up because the significance of that strike had huge, huge implications and outcome back then that is still felt and present today. Mm-hmm. Now, do you think those postal workers were scared of losing their jobs or going to jail? Of course they were. Mm-hmm. But they band together, they organized to get what they were asking for, and rightfully so, right? So my question here to you, Tyler, is this. Do you think we could do the same today, regardless if we have the right to strike or not? Why or why not? I know that question sounds a little bit similar, but it's a little bit different. Do you need me to repeat the question?
No. It makes sense to me. I think absolutely. That is, it's a question of organization and it's a question of power. And if you're well organized enough, you can, you know, if a law is immoral, well, then I think it's our duty and it's our obligation to break that law. Now, I'm not saying that tomorrow we should go out and break the federal law against striking for federal workers. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm just, you know, I want to put that forward for people. Do you agree? If a law is immoral, if a law is unjust, is it our obligation to break that law? I think that was a classic sort of slogan of the civil rights movement in this country in the 1960s. And I think that is how postal workers in 1970 saw it. And I think we have a lot to learn from that. But the point is, it's a question of organization, and it's a question of how we mobilize the power that we do hold in society and in our company that we work for. And if our national leadership refuses to even have a discussion to begin with on that, then it kind of puts us in a tricky position where we don't know how to even start. And so I think, to me, that is where it should start. It should start as a discussion and debate internally, and that we should try to everything we can to make it a legal right before we took any sort of action like that.
Right. Exactly. Well said. A legal right. And again, I am not advocating, inciting, or pushing for anyone to take part in striking action here. Right. I am not doing that. I'm just raising the awareness and having an open discussion and dialogue about this, which needs to be had. Mm-hmm. And again, this is my opinion only. And when I speak only for myself, but also for the many people I helped across this country. I'm not going to sit here and say I speak for them, but I can certainly say that I give my opinion to what side of the fence they may be leaning on. Mm-hmm. And again, that's just not a city letter carrier, mind you. The number of people I talk to across this country are pissed off at the way that things are going, not just with the agency management, but also their union as well, which again, better and safer working conditions, right? And better working wages, mm-hmm. Point blank, period. So again, I do believe we should have the right to strike. Regardless if you have that right or not, I do foresee us, and again, I hope I'm around to see this. I really do. And again, I'm not pushing for it. Don't take that comment the wrong fucking way here, people. It's just that, again, how much more shit are we going to tolerate and accept before we take some sort of action?
That's right.
You know, and again, this is just my opinion, and people, you might be getting pissed off at me. And listen, I don't do this shit for views and listens and downloads. I don't fucking care. Okay. I do this for the people because I care about you. I've been through everything in the fucking book, which is why I started Fed Up. So when I say this, this comes strictly and sincerely from my heart because I care, but I hope I'm around to see some form of organization happen, not just with open bargaining resolution, mm-hmm. but even in coming together and fighting for the cause, whether if it's just to push and gain and fight for just the right to have the right to strike and put that in our contract and the federal law changed, I'm fine with just seeing that. Or the opposite of that, actually seeing our membership or postal employees for that matter, as, you know, as a totality here, as a whole here, mm-hmm. actually organize together and say, enough is enough.
That's right.
We demand better. We want more. We deserve better, point blank. And listen, this can go either way to the people out there. But for me, the number one thing for me is the working condition.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Better, safer working conditions, because that encompasses the whole totality of what we fucking experience every single day in our jobs, which is the toxic and hostile environments, right? And everything that encompasses and falls under that umbrella. Dignity and respect, hostility, right? Harassment, bullying, violence, the workroom floor issues, mm-hmm. all that falls under that same umbrella. So for me, that would be my why factor, why I would join the cause of the people, of the members. I don't want to just say the members or the people, but of us postal employees, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel that's something that's important that we all should be given. And it's a right. Really, if you think about it, it's a basic human right. But also the other side of that is obviously the working wages. So whether you're for better working wages or for better working conditions or both for that matter, I stand firmly by my belief that if we united and came together as one, and this is Ron Speakman speaking his fucking mind here and giving you his opinion, and I'm not a postal employee any freaking more. I think that we should have the right to strike. And not only that, perhaps in the near future, I hope I'm around to see it happen, because there's nothing better that would be fulfilling and more rewarding to me than to actually see us postal employees. Again, if you're in a different agency, I feel for you. But again, I'm a postal employee. I'm a retired postal employee. So that's where my heart lays, right? But I'm with every federal employee out there. Don't get me wrong. But my brothers and sisters out there in the postal service, you deserve better. How much are you going to continually tolerate and accept before you say enough is enough? And I hope I'm around when you finally do say enough is enough and actually do unite as one for one common goal, which is better working conditions and better wages.
Right.
So the choice is yours to make, people. I mean, no one here is twisting your arm. We're just having a conversation about it, given our opinions of the subject. But that's where I stand on that, man. So I may lose listeners here. It is what it is. Again, I don't do this for listens and downloads. I do this for the people, man. But
that's right.
Tyler, listen, you mentioned public support. Do you think public support played a key role back then in the Great Postal Strike in 1970?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think it definitely played a key role. I think one aspect of it was they were able to shut down the ability for the Postal Service, and it wasn't everywhere, but it was most of the major metro areas across the country. They shut down their ability to fully function. But I think public support was absolutely a crucial part. And I think, you know, this was a period of general upsurge of struggle and from union social movements. And I think that it was a period when people, not dissimilar to the one that we're in now, where people understood, if people are standing up and saying enough is enough and we're going to get organized and we're going to fight, then I think people can stand with you. And I think it was definitely a very crucial part of it. Can I just say this one last thing before I got to get going?
Absolutely.
I want to hit home the significance of the 1970 postal wildcat strike. During the Carrier Academy, when you first start during orientation, just before I signed up to join the union, there were representatives of NALC there, and they played a video showing the 1970 strike. You know, it showed how it was a defining moment for our union. It showed how workers back then were getting screwed over, suffering from under the inflation of the period and without the right to collective bargaining. And what did they do? They got organized, they went on strike, and they won. And like I said, it was part of a period of a general upsurge in struggle and fighting back. And from that strike and the momentum afterwards, they were able to organize to transform the letter carrier job into a decent paying job with good benefits. You know, a lot of those benefits we still have. The wages have gotten kind of lowered, but a lot of those benefits were won from this strike. It really was a transformative moment. And in the years following the strike, it wasn't just that one moment. In the years following, they used that momentum to transform the union. The strike helped to build a whole layer of active members of NALC across the country, and they fought to build a stronger union. And they organized, coming out of that, they organized to win one member, one vote at the 1976 National Convention. And that before that, it was national leaders were elected on a delegate basis, and each member didn't have one vote for leadership. So they organized one member, one vote, and they used that to vote in Vince Sembrato in 1978, who we all know was a real fighter for letter carriers. So I think the 1970 strike was significant for many reasons, from the way it was used to win major economic gains for letter carriers, to the way the momentum was used to transform the NELC. And I think there's really a lot of lessons that we can learn from that struggle and apply them to today and how we're trying to organize and fight going forward.
Tyler, listen, man, that was a lot we just talked about here revolving around if we as postal employees should have the right to strike. So being that we are at the end here with this discussion, I want to ask you yet again, do you think postal employees should have the right to strike? Yes or no?
Yes.
Got it. I appreciate you answering that, Tyler. I mean, a little repetitive here, I know, but I just wanted to make sure you're not switching it up on me is all, because if you did, I had to ask you why. But it seems you're strongly affirmed in your position with regards to should postal employees have the right to strike. And for those of you out there who are saying, well, Ron, we can't strike or cause a work stoppage. It's in our contract. It's against the law. We can lose our jobs. We can go to jail for participating in a work stoppage or strike. Listen, you're right. You may lose your jobs. You may go to jail. But do you think that stopped the postal employees who participated in the Great Postal Strike in 1970? Hell no. There was too much to gain than to lose for them. They felt uncertainty and didn't know what was going to happen. They too didn't know if they would end up in jail and lose their jobs as well. Now, it was a different time back then as opposed to today, but they didn't give a fuck because the cause, which was being fought for, was much more important than themselves. They came together as one, and it's just as I say all the time here, united we stand, but divided we fall. And that couldn't have been any more true than what we saw come from those uniting from all over the country for a cause that was much bigger than any individual circumstances back in 1970. We are much stronger together. Again, I said this before in another episode of Fed Up. Every one of you individual union members are like fingers on a hand. They are most effective when they come together in a unified grasp. So fuck the middle finger. We should be making a fist. Because again, united we stand, but divided we fall. That's why the strength of union members lies in their collective unity. But it all starts with you. And again, as corny as it sounds, you can't spell union or unity without you. So no matter where you stand on this issue of work stoppages or striking, regardless if you are for it or against it, whatever you decide to do, just remember that we need to stand together no matter what it is we are fighting for or how we go about it. Tyler, one more question here as we near the end of the show here. And again, I may have asked you this here before, I believe, but where do you think the power of our union comes from?
Yeah, I think it comes from the membership. It comes from the fact that we are the ones who do the work every day that make this organization run. And I think at the same time, we need strong leadership that can put forward, you know, chart a path forward, put forward demands and a program that can mobilize the membership. But I think there's a symbiotic relationship between the membership and the leadership. You need an active membership to push the leadership forward, but you need a strong leadership that can chart a path forward, that can activate and mobilize the membership. And I think that is where the strength of our union comes from for contract negotiations and for everyday work from floor issues, for enforcing the contract.
Absolutely. Yes, sir. Well said again. And I believe it comes from the members as well, as it's the members and their voices that can dictate change. It's a matter of if we can and want to let our voices be heard, and if we can or want to take action when action is needed. And from the looks of things today, it seems our actions lie in organizing and uniting as one for this movement of yours, but also for the continued fight we have to take part in against management and the poor leadership we have within our local and national levels within the NELC. Now, Tyler, before we close out the show, is there anything else you want to share with or say to your brothers and sisters out there in Fed Up Nation who are in the NELC?
I would say if you're feeling like the moment is bleak with the delayed negotiations, with the charges against their national president, I would say you should take faith in the fact that there are hundreds, in reality, thousands of people paying attention, but there are hundreds and hundreds of people already getting organized across the country from every part of this country that are getting organized to transform our union going forward. I'd like to say it's going to change tomorrow. That's not a fact, though. It's going to take, in the next weeks and months, heading into the national convention, going forward from that into the 2026 leadership elections. There are members of this union across the country who are getting organized to fight to transform our union. And so I would just take faith in that. I would say be a part of this movement. That is how we're going to strengthen this thing. Join our next Build a Fighting NELC Zoom meeting on Sunday, April 14th. It's at noon Central Time. That's 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time. We're going to be doing these meetings going forward, you know, once a month going into the convention. And join our Build a Fighting NELC Zoom meeting. Join this movement and pass the open bargaining resolution. That's really the best place to start. And we're, you know, we're getting organized. We're going to fight. And we're going to move forward and build a stronger union together.
Absolutely. Well said. And how about to all other postal employees out there outside of the NELC? What message would you want to leave them?
I would say that we have a lot of work to do in building and forging unity and solidarity amongst the different crafts, amongst the four postal unions that exist. I wish that we had coordinated more. It's unfortunate that that's not currently happening. But I would say I look forward in the months and the years to come of us forging unity and solidarity and organizing together. There's an old labor saying, an injury to one is an injury to all. And I think that applies to, you know, definitely applies to the Postal Service and the workforce more broadly. But, you know, the opposite is true. I think that saying also means that when we stand together, we're a whole lot stronger than if we're, you know, divided. And so I think I would say I look forward to working together more and building that going forward across the different crafts.
Yes, sir. Again, well said, brother. Listen, Tyler, it was a pleasure having you on the show here again today. I look forward to having that third interview with you and hearing another update when we talk next. But thank you for joining us today, Tyler.
All right, Ron. I really appreciate taking the time.
Absolutely. And again, to the listeners out there, remember, you can join the movement by registering with the Zoom link that will be once again placed into the description of this episode, as well as on my Facebook page. And you can also email Tyler himself with any questions regarding the Build a Fighting NELC movement focused around open bargaining resolution at tylervasser@gmail.com. That's TYLERV as in Victor, ASSEUR@gmail.com. Listen, before I close out today's show, I just want to leave you with these three quotes here. The first one is from a politician that, again, gave our guest Tyler here his first dose of politics and ignited his passion to be an activist and to get involved. And that politician is none other than, that's right, you guessed it, Bernie Sanders. Bernie said, "The federal workforce is the backbone of our government, and they should not be denied the right to collectively bargain for fair wages and working conditions." I think that speaks for itself, and Bernie Sanders is 100% right. The second quote here is from a former politician and former president of the United States, Mr. Barack Obama, and he said, "Government workers should have the same rights as those in the private sector to join a union and collectively bargain for fair wages and working conditions." Again, pretty straightforward here with that quote, as it speaks for itself as well. And again, I agree 100% with that. Now, the third quote here comes from a man you may or may not have heard of, and that's Henry Ford. Henry once said, "Workers should never be afraid to strike for better conditions. It's the cornerstone of progress." Again, I agree 100% with this. It can be and has been the cornerstone of progress throughout labor history. Now, the common theme that brings these three quotes from these three people together is actually quite simple. But before I say what that is, I just first want to say that, yes, I do realize that I just used three quotes from three people who are affiliated with the Democratic Party. So if you are a Republican or for the Republican Party, don't read too much into that. Again, you should know me by now. I don't give a fuck about politics. All right. I chose those quotes because I liked those quotes. Period. Plain and simple. So don't read too much into that. All right. But what I wanted to say was this. They all speak of the right for us federal employees to have the right to collectively bargain for fair or better wages and working conditions. But when collective bargaining is failing us, or it has been compromised, then perhaps we all can look at these three quotes and see another meaning behind the message that they are conveying. And that is, strikes are and can be the voice of those who have no other recourse. as that is pretty much what we as postal employees are currently faced with right now. As we have tried many times through multiple avenues to try and remedy many issues within our workplace, within our union, with no success at all. All the while, our members in the NELC are growing more and more restless and pissed off and are looking to get involved to fight for and build a better and a fighting NELC union. Not only that, but to also fight back against the toxic and hostile environments we all have been enduring for far too long. We want better working conditions, better wages, and accountability for any wrongdoers out there, whether from management or union leaders. Again, strikes are the voice of those who have no other recourse. What recourse is left for us, both as individuals and as a union organization? So as we close out today's show here, remember, we delved into a thought-provoking discussion about whether federal workers, particularly postal workers, should have the right to strike. We've explored the potential implications, the significance of solidarity and unity, and what it can mean for improving working conditions and advocating for better standards and wages. And it's essential to recognize that while the right to strike is currently illegal for federal workers, including postal workers, the concept of solidarity and unity remains potent. Imagining a scenario where the membership comes together as one to advocate for change underscores the power of collective action and the importance of standing together in pursuit of common goals. However, it's again crucial to emphasize that Tyler and I are not advocating, encouraging, or inciting individuals to engage in strike action. Our intention is purely to foster open dialogue and consideration of different perspectives on this topic. We believe that constructive discussion is vital for identifying challenges and exploring potential solutions in the workplace. Therefore, any decisions regarding collective action should be made through lawful and responsible channels, and individuals should always consider the legal and practical implications of their actions. This podcast aims to promote informed discussion and critical thinking, encouraging listeners to approach this topic with thoughtful consideration and respect for differing viewpoints. So I'll ask you this to everybody out there: will you continue to accept and tolerate the way things are currently within our union and our workplace? Do you want to live to work? Or will you choose to take a stand and fight against all the unethical wrongdoing against management and fight for better working conditions and better wages? Do you want to work to live rather than live to work? What side of this fight will you be on? The choice is yours to make here. Choose wisely. Otherwise, instead of progress, we may degress, making it harder to get what we want and deserve, which again is better working conditions and better wages and a stronger, more respectable, fighting NALC for all of us out there who are members. Thank you for joining us on this journey of exploration and discussion in today's episode. Until next time, remember to stay informed, stay engaged, and continue advocating for positive change in our workplaces. That about does it here for us at Fed Up. Please don't forget to like, follow, and share this podcast. And if you are fed up like everyone else is and want to share your story and experiences, your issues and frustrations, and want your voice to be heard, I invite you to be a guest on this show. There's strength in numbers, and together, by sharing our stories, we can and will make the change that is needed. Just send me an email at one.fedup.podcast@gmail.com. Again, that's the number 1.fedup.podcast@gmail.com, and I'll get back to you as soon as possible. Again, thanks for tuning in. Until next time, stay safe out there, my friends.